Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, it's been an eventful weekend. I don't know if it's necessarily good or bad, but for the most part, it's good for Tim Pawlenty and Herman Cain because they've announced that they're running, and other people, several now in the past several days, who we thought would probably run are not going to, and we'll get to one of those in the bad martini for the day. But Tim Pawlenty, who basically let it slip to no one's surprise in a cable interview a few weeks ago that he was running for president, has made it official. Here's just a snippet of his official video announcing that he was an official candidate.
The truth is, our country's in big trouble. We have far too much debt, too much government spending, and too few jobs. We need a president who understands that our problems are deep and who has the courage to face them. President Obama doesn't. I do.
In another spot in that same video, Jim, he also talked about how fancy speeches aren't going to solve anything. We've tried that for the past 3 years, so he's clearly going straight after Obama. So a little bit over the top in some places, and we'll have a snippet of that in just a second. But for the most part, a guy who seems to be on message.
Really like kind of the opening in which he talks about all the traditional stuff of a campaign and how that the balloons and the people chanting the name and all that stuff, it doesn't really mean that much. I think there's I think that's a subtle shot at Barack Obama. And I think also when you say, you know, in his opening message, he goes directly at Barack Obama. Well, that works in a Republican primary. Republicans respond very well when you criticize the president. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. I think my only quibble with it was, I'd say about the first 60 seconds are about running for president, the need for hard truths, et cetera. And then, like, all of a sudden, he talks a little bit about his background, about his mom and his dad and his humble his you know, humble roots. It felt a little too forced compared to everything else because I think it was a very strong close. I don't know if that's what you're going to go to next, but all in all, considering how the other ones felt like Bruckheimer action movies, this was just the right tone, I thought, for a introductory presidential campaign message. And this is the first thing people see about Tim Pawlenty. I think a lot of them are going to say, I want to know more about this guy.
Yeah, and I think that's what he's hoping for because despite the fact that he's considered one of the top-tier candidates in the punditry world where we spend a lot of time, the polls don't really show it right now. And so he needs kind of a boost, and maybe the absence of some other high-profile names will help him in the coming months here. We'll see. You alluded to it, Jim. This is not enhanced in any way. This is the soundtrack that goes at the end of the Pawlenty video.
Join me tomorrow and around the country in the days and weeks ahead. You won't hear empty promises. You'll hear solutions. Together, we'll change our country. And this time, it'll be for the better.
Jim, I almost expected Leonardo DiCaprio to sink under the waves at that point while Kate Winslet tearfully hung on to the whatever it was she was hanging on to at the end of Titanic.
See, maybe it's that slightly earlier bit there. I kept waiting to hear the Ewoks go yub-nub in the background. Like they just finally blown up the Death Star and the universe was free. Occasionally, you can get a little too on the schmaltzy side in this. But I think that considering how we've seen every one of the usual campaign cliches, I think this will work okay. And again, I love that the contrast. I remember, you know, arguing on the blog in 2007 and 2008, change is not improvement. They are not synonyms. They are not the same. You know, just because something is changing doesn't mean it's getting better. This unspoken counter argument that I kept waiting to hear from the McCain campaign back in 2008. I'm glad Pawlenty is able to say, because I think it's a very powerful message of mom, and say, yeah, you brought change and now things are worse. And that, I think, will, you know, whoever the Republican nominee is, I think the argument is going to be some variation of that. And good for him for picking up on it early.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy that you and I have said from the very get-go that we liked a lot, Herman Cain, has not actually held public office, but he's held a lot of major private sector jobs, especially Godfather's Pizza, resurrecting that from the brink of bankruptcy when he took over that a number of decades ago. He's also briefly been the president of a Fed bank. He probably won't highlight that too much on the campaign trail. Here's a snippet of his videos. He made it official over the weekend that he's getting in as well.
We will preserve and assure that these United States of America, the greatest nation the planet has ever seen, will not compromise her legacy. She will not accept debt nor a mantle of mediocrity.
And Cain didn't stop there. In interviews over the weekend, he also talked a lot about the Middle East situation, given Obama's controversial comments from last week, said he wouldn't even really offer many concessions to the Palestinians, if at all, because he doesn't think, for the most part, they're interested in peace. They're just interested in rubbing out Israel. And I know you've been tracking the comments that he's made on the right of return for Palestinians. So very interesting how he's getting into this full scale, and how, given the lack, again, of high-profile candidates, he's really starting to raise his profile. We'll see if it's enough.
Yeah, just kind of two quick notes on Cain's one. His was almost entirely biographical, and perhaps he needs it. But I think it was interesting. I think, you know, there are a lot of little touches in it that I liked. Among them, I didn't realize that Herman Cain had survived cancer. And at one point, he was given a 30% chance of survival. Mm-hmm. He talks about this, you know, and you see him walking through his church. And there are a lot of candidates who would try to bring their religious faith front and center in a very explicit way. And I thought talking about a near-death experience kind of gave you a good sense of Herman Cain and what's shaped him and what's made his values. So I liked that. I think, you know, and obviously over his comments over the weekend, well, I'll refer people to the campaign spot because it's a little too long to get into here, but not knowing what right of return is not going to be a very big deal in GOP primaries. And I'm not even convinced it's going to be a very big deal in the general election. I think this is, you know, most Americans do not follow the Middle East peace process, every little detail of it. And so it's not the most common term. And I think most Americans are fed up with listening to, you know, the people who elected Hamas and danced on 9/11 and who generally have not had terribly pro-American attitudes. So the idea that he may have, you know, snubbed the Palestinians or not been terribly familiar with their demands, I have a hard time believing this is going to cost him a single vote. So keep an eye on Herman Cain. You know, obviously faces some long odds, but I think he's going to turn a lot of heads before all this is done.
Yeah, I think so. Another person that you and I have talked about in the past, and that a lot of fiscal conservatives certainly wanted to get in the race, and we pretty much thought was going to, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels. Been a very strong a possibility. He's got a good fiscal record when most states don't have a very good fiscal record. And in the end, citing family issues that we knew were out there, he has decided not to make the run. So that leave the lane open potentially for somebody who hasn't necessarily been on the radar screen, or it definitely improves the odds for those who are already in the race, like Pawlenty and Herman Cain. But the lack of Mitch Daniels in this race, I think, especially when you look at some of the others that aren't getting in, particularly Haley Barbour, you like to see some of those governors in the race, and unfortunately, they're not going to be there.
Yeah, I guess there's a part of me that's somewhat disappointed. I think any governor who can keep his state's budget balanced, California, New York, Illinois, facing unbelievable budget crises, deserves a long, hard look in this type of economic circumstance. Mitch Daniels is very good at saying no to additional spending, and I think that's the sort of thing that's an undervalued factor in Republican politics. Obviously had some stumbles, and I think you could just kind of see from his personal style, Mitch Daniels was not a panderer. He was not a guy who believed in changing himself very much. And he was a guy who I think looks at national politics with a rather skeptical eye. I think he sees the circus that is almost inevitable in every presidential campaign run as really an ordeal that he wasn't sure it was worth enduring. And he talked about it with his family, and he decided it wasn't worth enduring. Very much creates an opening. So obviously, some of this is going to be good news for Pawlenty. Some of this is going to I think, a lot of discussion. Will Christie jump in? Will Rick Perry jump in? Will Jeb Bush run in? You notice there's a lot of talk about governors. I think there's an idea of looking for somebody who's been a governor, who's been in that executive position, who's run something large and can, you know, hopefully transfer that to the national level. But in the end, look, if he didn't want to do it, there's no point in wasting everyone's time pretending he wanted to do it. I don't think he was dithering. I think he really was chewing this over. And in the end, you know, if you don't want to put your family through it, don't do it. You know, the other thing I also would note, particularly when you look at these other folks who are still on the sidelines, Bachman looks like she's in, but it's not certain. Palin, obviously. If you're looking for a reason to not run, you'll always find one.
Oh, absolutely. I think this has become a more and more onerous prospect for anyone trying to do it. And for those who are going around a second or even more time on this, like a Romney, like a Ron Paul, even on a slightly smaller campaign budget, it's an exhausting run, and you definitely have to want it, and you have to be all in, and that's basically what Haley Barbour said before, and I think Mitch Daniels is essentially saying the same thing here, only with slightly different conditions behind the decision. So quickly on to number three now in our remaining time, and I don't think we need to tell anybody that Cynthia McKinney's crazy. The former Georgia congresswoman who, of course, got the boot first for suggesting that 9/11 was an inside job and the President Bush was behind it all the way. So she lost a primary, then she came back 2 years later, then was quickly fired again for shoving a Capitol Hill police officer who dared to actually see her congressional pin and make her go through security. Just absolutely insane treatment there. Now she's going around to visit the state television of all our enemies, going to Iran, first of all, and saying that anyone who considers Iran a terrorist-sponsoring nation needs to understand that she disagrees with most of American policies. Then she goes on Libyan television and says this: "I think that it's very important that people understand what is happening here, and it's important that people all over the world see the truth, and that is why I am here, to understand the truth. I want to say categorically and very clearly that these policies of war," meaning towards Libya, "are not what the people of the United States stand for and not what the African Americans stand for." And then she actually went on to accuse Barack Obama of catering to the rich instead of the poor, which is very interesting. Jim, I don't know if we should just dismiss this as this woman is absolutely nuts, or the fact that this is how far left the fringe of the left of the Democratic Party has gotten.
Well, we can laugh at the Democrats. We really should say, way to go, Green Party, as she was their Green Party presidential candidate in the year 2008. Obviously not getting a great deal of attention to that. And I'm sure somewhere Ralph Nader is saying, heck, what was wrong with me? But just kind of observe, this is a woman who's always involved in every aspect of anti-war movement and a very vocal when she was in Congress. There's an argument you see on InstaPundit and a couple other blogs that says they're not, you know, anti-war. They're just pro the other side. And when you see this, and you find yourself saying, well, who in the world would defend – who in the world would lend Muammar Gaddafi a sympathetic ear? Who would go to him and say, look, Muammar, tell us your problems. Tell us your side of the story. Cynthia McKinney, that's the one. And we really probably shouldn't be too surprised by this. I just think that the line between fervently anti-left and – I would say Cynthia McKinney is a useful idiot, but I have a feeling that not even Gaddafi finds her all that useful. So, you know, useless idiot, perhaps. But, you know, the idea that there's a very fine line between that. And I think she's jumped completely over it. And you kind of wonder how many Democrats or anti-war Democrats are that far from this. I should note, though, that I'm exaggerating slightly because this is, an illegal war, Greg, the War Powers Act, which I guess got repealed by magic wand or something.
Executive order,
we're,
I'm sure.
We're now more than 60 days in. There was never congressional authorization. And I remember back in the old days, you could get war with congressional authorization like Afghanistan and Iraq, and it would still be called an illegal war. Now you don't need it anymore, apparently. It became optional when Obama got elected. I missed that constitutional amendment. But hey, such as things are, I think it just kind of shows you how topsy-turvy they are. At least maybe, you know, when we look at the warmongering types in the White House, perhaps we can reach across the aisle and all laugh at Cynthia McKinney.
Absolutely right. I think it's actually a stabilizing factor when so many things are out of kilter, the jobless rate, gas prices. At least we can still count on the fact that Cynthia McKinney is completely nuts. Jim, have a great day.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.